Turkey appears to be heading for its first presidential election runoff. With counting from Sunday's vote in its final stages, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan remains short of the 50% needed to win outright. He says he'll respect any decision to hold a second round. Victoria Gatenby reports.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan addressed supporters outside the headquarters of the Justice and Development Party in Ankara. It was his first appearance since the polls closed. He told them he's ready for a runoff if the election goes to a second round.
We have seen that the margin with the closest opponent is more than 2 million votes, and with the final result we will see a wider margin. We don't know if we will have a runoff, but if this is the result of the first round, the results of the runoff will be the same. If our nation has decided to go to a second round, we will respect that decision.
His main challenger, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, leads a six-party opposition alliance that's determined to unseat Erdogan. He urged supporters to be patient.
Despite his smear campaign against us, Erdogan hasn't gotten the result he wanted. We have to wait for the final results. If the first round wasn't enough to receive the mandate, we are going to get it in the runoff election.
Election officials have been counting the votes throughout the night. A third presidential candidate, Sinan Oğan, has done better than expected. Analysts say he has the potential to be kingmaker.
Oğan is an anti-immigrant, anti-refugee candidate, and I think it's basically a new epoch in Turkish politics, because both sides will court him to get his votes, and they will have to do at least something to satisfy his base and his message.
So far, Oğan is refusing to back either Erdogan or Kılıçdaroğlu.
Gözüken o ki seçimler ikinci tura kalacak.
There will be another difficult 15 days ahead of us, and during this time, if the elections are completed with the current results and go to the second round, we will do our best to make this process a good one for our nation and our country. At this time, we are not saying that we will support one party or the other.
Erdogan has led Turkey for two decades, overseeing growth in trade and foreign investment, as well as ambitious infrastructure development projects. But more recently, he's been criticized for high inflation and the Turkish lira's devaluation to the US dollar. Kılıçdaroğlu says he wants to reform the system of governance and return power to parliament. A runoff vote will almost certainly be needed to decide Turkey's future. Victoria Gatenby, Al Jazeera.
I want to take you to the Turkish capital, Ankara. Now, that's where the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe is going to be holding a press conference. The group's been monitoring the election for irregularities. This is Michael George Link speaking. He's the special coordinator and leader of the short-term observer mission. They've had 28 long-term observers who've been deployed throughout the country from April the 7th. They've also had 14 international experts based in Ankara itself. Let's listen in.
Of course, following these two important elections which we witnessed yesterday. It is always for us an honor to be here in this wonderful and hospitable country where we are not observing elections for the first time. But therefore, because it's so tragic, please allow me to start by expressing our condolences on the tragic loss of life, where so many lives have been lost, that occurred following the earthquakes earlier this year. This certainly makes this observation a special one. We are here in full conscience of the losses the Turkish people had suffered, and that this is not an easy situation. All of us observers were so impressed by the overwhelming turnout in these elections. In this centenary year of the Turkish Republic, the Turkish people have clearly demonstrated their commitment and their willingness to having the decisive say in the future of this country. Now let me come to the conclusions, to the main conclusions, which we will share with you today. More complete statement, as you know, will be available and published immediately after our statements. And therefore, let me summarize from my view the most important points. In the general elections held in the wake of the devastating earthquakes, voters had a choice between genuine political alternatives, and voter participation was high. But the incumbent and the ruling parties enjoyed an unjustified advantage, including through biased media coverage. So there were genuine political alternatives, but limited by an unlevel playing field. In addition to this, the continued restrictions on fundamental freedoms of assembly, association and expression hindered the participation of some opposition politicians and parties, civil society and independent media in the election process. Nonetheless, we found that the campaign itself was competitive and largely free for most contestants, but was characterized by intense polarization and marred by harsh rhetoric, instances of misuse of administrative resources, and the pressure and intimidation faced by especially one opposition party. The election administration technically managed the elections efficiently, but there was a lack of transparency and communication, as well as concern over its independence. Measures designed to facilitate registration and voting for earthquake-affected citizens were limited, placing an additional burden on these voters to exercise their voting rights. Election day was generally well organized and assessed positively by our observers. However, instances of deficient implementation of certain procedures, particularly during voting and counting, were noted. That's the overall picture, but I want to particularly highlight a few background topics that brought us to these conclusions. It's important that, and an important background information, that in practice, freedom of assembly, association and expression are restricted by legislation, and that the independence of the judiciary remains a concern. While we note positively that the long-standing recommendation to lower the parliamentary threshold was addressed, many other important recommendations remain unaddressed. Turning to the political scene, yes, the technical registration of candidates, the technical registration was managed inclusively, but still party dissolution proceedings against the second largest opposition party impeded its participation, and the criminal prosecution of some prominent opposition politicians may also have hindered their candidacy. Such sort of politically motivated interference in the electoral process is not in line with international commitments made by Turkey, for example, in the OSCE or under the European Convention of Human Rights. This applied also to some very prominent individuals, including the mayor of Istanbul, Mr. Marmolo, and former HDP chair, co-chair Demirtas. All in all, let me sum up that in a spirit of friendship and deep affection to the Turkish people and to this country, we were observing and we were trying to do to the best of our abilities, our observation. In summing up, let me say these were competitive but still limited elections, as the criminalization of some political forces, including the detention of several opposition politicians, prevented full political pluralism and impeded some individuals' rights to run in elections. That is why we said political interference in the electoral process is not in line with Turkey's international commitments, and that is what we measure, whether commitments are being respected and the law is being respected. For the preliminary results we have seen, this election is not over. We will continue to observe also the second round of the presidential election and look forward to releasing further conclusions at that time. Thank you very much. And back over to Katja.
Thank you very much. We now move on to Frank Schwabe, who heads the delegation from PACE.
Thank you very much, Igüler. Good afternoon. So I refer to the text as well, but in addition, I would like to say that we were here as a Council of Europe with 39 members for the short-term election observation. I would like to thank the OSCE ODIHR for the very good cooperation, because at the end, we are in a way depending on the professionality of this organization. So I have to inform you that we were invited by the authorities of this country due to the situation that Turkey is under monitoring in the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. We are prepared for sure as well for a possible second round, but we were here already for a pre-electoral mission, 2 days, and we had the opportunity to have had a lot of interlocutors from all over the society, the governmental parties, the opposition parties, civil societies, and so on and so on. And we had the opportunity to meet the central Electoral Council, what unfortunately was this time not possible. So the country have a lot of democratic challenges for sure, and we have a lot of statements in our organization, the Council of Europe, referring to this. But nevertheless, I have to say as well, like Mr. Link, that we were impressed by the high turnout in this election and by the possibility, even when it's problematic, to run and to have an election campaign for some parties and some politicians, that there was the possibility of a competition. You could feel it at the election day that the Turkish democracy is breathing. So I would say the Turkish democracy is providing to be amazingly resilient. This shows the high turnout in the election, but Turkey does not fulfill the basic principles of a democratic election for sure as well. Central political and social actors are in prison. Against judgments of the European Court of Human Rights, media freedom is severely restricted, and there's a climate of self-censorship. So Turkey has a long way from fair election campaign conditions. And I really would like to underline this, because some people say, what has it to do with the elections and with the election campaign and our observation? We have judgments from the, I would call it, highest court in Europe, the European Court of Human Rights. And I'm really here to call the authorities in the country, which one ever, we will see, to release those one who are in prison and where is a very clear judgment from the European Court of Human Rights. And the most important and prominent examples are Osman Kavala and Selah Hatice Demirtaş, because this has to do something with the democratic constitution and the situation in the country. I have also to remind the Turkish government on the recommendations of the Venice Commission and GRECO and other bodies of the Council of Europe. We spoke already about the question of media freedom. I always used, when I go to election campaign, to switch on the TV, even if I don't understand the language, but I get an impression. And when I switch on TRT Harbour, maybe you are here, I have really an impression that the current president was very much seen in TV, and we had a lot of talks together with Ertürk, the Radio and Television High Council, in the pre-electoral mission, now in the mission. And till today, I don't really understand the rules very much. And for sure, it brings a kind of situation of self-censorship into the country, and this has to concern out. Again, there was a really high turnout and a generally free access for voters to go to the polling stations yesterday, although there were some situations. I faced one myself where what was not very easy because people were very nervous. And this was my assessment, but anyhow, it was possible to vote. We have restrictions for sure, very much for the HDP and for some politicians. We have to mention it, and we mention it in several reports of the Council of Europe. What was a matter of concern was really the situation yesterday evening and in the night, where it was not really clear how the situation was going on and what was really happening. I think it's more clear today. And really, this I have to ask the Supreme Electoral Council, who have a very special mandate in this country, to be as much as transparent as possible, because I think with much more transparency, it would be able to prevent such a situation. Again, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having us here in this situation. We try to do our job, our mandate, impartial as possible. And thank you very much for the good cooperation here.
Many thanks. We now move on to Farah Karimi, who heads the delegation from the OSCPA.
Thank you, Katya, and thank you all for joining us, especially after a long election day and night. So I want to express my deep appreciation to my colleagues, Special Coordinator Michael Link, Head of PACE Delegation Frank Schwabe, and for their and also Ambassador Jan Petersen for their excellent cooperation throughout our election observation mission. My name is Farah Karimi, and I am a senator in the Dutch Senate and a member of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly. It was an honor for me to head a team of 98 OSCE Parliamentary Assembly observers from 26 different countries who came together to observe the elections in your beautiful country. I want to highlight that our teams were warmly welcomed across the country, not just in Ankara, but also in regions like Istanbul, Izmir, Van, and Diyarbakir. And personally, I had the privilege of observing the process in Cankaya and Elmadag. And I extend my sincere gratitude to everyone for their warm hospitality. Unfortunately, I must address the regrettable decision by the Turkish government to deny accreditations to two parliamentarians from Sweden and Denmark. While we respect a country's right to control access to polling stations, it is important that the invitation to our assembly to observe elections does not influence the composition of the observation missions. This decision, based on the parliamentarians' public opinion, is particularly disheartening. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to echo the statements made by my colleagues, Mr. Link and Mr. Schwabe, in emphasizing that despite the availability of political alternatives for Turkish people, these elections have seen unfair advantages enjoyed by the incumbent president and ruling parties. We are yet to know the final results, but in the event of a second presidential round, we will pay close attention to ensuring a level playing field in our observations. Throughout our mission, we closely monitored every step of the election day process, from the opening of polling stations to the voting and counting. The polling stations we visited had a remarkable voter turnout, showing the strong democratic spirit of the Turkish people. I commend the dedication of everyone involved, including poll workers and civil society. It is crucial to address the significant underrepresentation of women in Turkish politics. I urge the next government, parliament, and political parties to take concrete actions to ensure equal participation of women in the country's political life. This can include introducing laws that guarantee an equal number of male and female candidates on electoral lists. I also want to express my appreciation for the determination shown by those who, despite the challenges caused by recent earthquakes, made the effort to travel to their damaged homes and vote. However, it's concerning that the voter turnout in earthquake-affected areas was lower, indicating that many people couldn't vote. In case of a second round of the presidential election, we hope concrete measures will be taken to ensure everyone can exercise their right to vote. The government should also take additional steps to support individuals facing difficulties during such critical circumstances. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attention. And of course, I am ready to answer any question you may have.
Thank you very much. And last but not least, from the podium, we turn to Ambassador Jan Petersen, who heads the mission of the International Observer Mission from ODIHR's side.
Thank you very much, and I join my colleagues in welcome you, all of you, and thank you for your interest in our work. First of all, I would like to begin by thanking the Turkish authorities for inviting us to observe. And I'd also like to thank our partners in the International Election Observation Mission from the OEC Parliamentary Assembly as well as the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe for their excellent cooperation, and especially our coordinator, Mr. Ling. Before I go into our findings in more detail, I'd like to emphasize the fact that I and a team of election experts have been in Turkey since late March, with 28 long-term observers arriving just a week later to observe around the country. In this period of 6 weeks, we have therefore had the opportunity to observe the run-up to the elections closely and to hold numerous meetings with officials as well as representatives of the election authorities, political parties, civil society, and the media. Further, 213 short-term observers joined us last week, enabling us to make a comprehensive statistical assessment of the voting process on the election day. Allow me then to go into a few key points in more detail. First of all, I would like to congratulate the people of Turkey for their democratic spirit, which was illustrated by the high turnout on election day. Voters had a choice to make between genuine political alternatives, and the campaign period was mostly peaceful, with most candidates campaigning freely. At the same time, the election administration, led by the Supreme Election Council, worked efficiently and mostly within the set legal deadlines. This was no small feat, given the challenges of the devastating earthquakes that shook this country just a few months ago. These are all positive elements in the process running up to yesterday's election, and I'm glad to be able to draw your attention to them here today. However, there are other elements of our assessment that are regrettably more negative. I just mentioned the election administration. Notwithstanding its efficiency, its work was marked by a lack of transparency, inadequate communication, and concern over independence. Not only were sessions of the Supreme Election Commission and Mid-Level Election Council not held in public, but the Supreme Election Council also failed to publish most of its decisions, despite the legal obligation to do so. Another area of concern was the pressure on opposition politicians and parties, which was a serious obstacle to their participation in the election. The Green Left Party faced widespread intimidation and even arrest of its supporters, which goes against international standards and severely obstructed the party's campaign opportunities. Long-standing concern about the respect for fundamental freedoms of the assembly, association and expression, which are all key to democracy, were not dealt with during the election period. And also the constitution guarantees the independence of the judiciary. Many of the people to whom we spoke from across a wide spectrum of society continue to raise concerns that this independence is not being upheld. And then a final point, an important point I would like to make from our long-term observation concerns the media. The ODIHR mission monitored the media coverage of the campaign. In our assessment, the freedom of expression and the media, also protected by the Constitution, is limited by a number of laws. The recent criminalization of dissemination of false information, the fact that websites are frequently blocked and online content removed, and the ongoing arrests and prosecutions of journalists further weaken freedom of expression. Unfortunately, we also noted that the public broadcaster clearly favored the ruling parties and their candidates during the campaign, despite its constitutional obligation to remain impartial. The majority of private national TV channels were monitored as part of our observation. We're also clearly biased towards the ruling parties in their coverage. I'd like to make a final point on the elections, election day itself. Voting day was mostly peaceful, although there were a number of incidents in and around polling stations. Although the process was generally well organized, observers reported that safeguards such as the sealing of ballot boxes and verifying voter ID were not always implemented in addition. In some polling stations, the layout did not fully guarantee the secrecy of the vote, and family and group voting were frequent. Unfortunately, over half of the polling stations were not fully accessible for persons with disabilities. These are some of the key points from our observations, which I now have mentioned, that began already in March. However, there are many more points in our report with the initial findings of the International Observer Mission. And I would recommend that you take a copy together with the press release on your way out. And before I finished, a heartfelt thanks to the team working with me here in Ankara, as well as the long and short-term observers spread out across the country. And thank you again for coming, and I as well ready to answer your questions. Thank you.
You're watching Al Jazeera. We've been bringing you live pictures from Ankara, where the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe has been announcing its preliminary findings because it has been monitoring the process of the Turkey elections over the last 24, 48 hours. But they've actually had observers in country from about April the 7th. You just heard the head of the Election Observer Mission, Jan Peterson, the ambassador there, outlining some of the main key points that have been brought up by all the speakers that we've seen. They've been impressed by the turnout of voters to the elections. But they've also had concerns about media bias in the run-up to the elections. Michael George Link, the leader of the short-term observer mission, described it as an unlevel playing field. But he said they have also all referred to intimidation faced by opposition politicians as well, again, in the run-up to this. I want to go to Hashim Akhbara, who's live for us in Ankara. One would imagine that the opposition is going to be paying very close attention to this to see if there's anything there that they're going to be able to use in their response as we head towards the second election that we're going to see in future.
Well, Rob, now the opposition is saying that it's confident it is going to go for a runoff, but still it has been expressing concerns over the ballot. Those concerns were echoed today at the press conference by the Organization of the Security and Cooperation in Europe, with its ambassador Jan Peterson talking about issues that Turkey has to tackle in the future, particularly when it comes to the restrictions placed on political parties, opposition figures, detention of politicians. And they say this is not something that could be conducive to freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and pluralism in the country. And they say that the government candidates were given unjustified greater access, particularly to state-run media, something the opposition leaders have been repeating time and again. And I think these are issues which are going to definitely be top priorities for the international observers who will be there for a runoff, but also for the opposition. Because when you look at the percentage of the votes as we speak, President Erdogan at 49%, trailed by opposition leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu by 44%, you're getting greater indication that this is going to be also an extremely delicate, tense runoff, where all the parties say we need equal access to media to be able to send our message to the people so that people understand what we are for, what do we stand for, and vote for us.
Hashim, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu has about just nearly 45% of the vote. There's already been some criticism coming out of his performance and that of some of the opposition as well. What does this mean for the unity of the opposition? Because, well, of course, that was key in the run-up to this latest election.
It's an opposition coalition whose future hangs by a thread, because it was extremely difficult to bring them together to move forward. And I think their main goal was basically toppling President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. They have never managed to set aside their differences about wide range of issues, economy, politics and foreign policy. The biggest problem now would be for Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu to hold them together for the runoff. But when it comes to the runoff, you have a problem here. If they are, for example, going to build bridges with the third candidate, Sinan Oğan, this is not something which is going to please the other components of the opposition. Number two, if they decide to convince people across the country for more votes, you might have different views about who should have a bigger say in the future. This means that the coalition will continue to be fragile for the upcoming weeks and months.
Hashim, thank you very much indeed. That's Hashim Ahbara talking to us from Ankara. We've just been listening to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which has been giving its assessment of the Turkish elections, which have just been going on in the last 48 hours or so. I'm going to be back in about 30 minutes with more on this story and others. I'm Rob Matheson. Stay with us.